Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/truetransparencypricing. Happy you'll be if the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Nashville SC loses 1-0 on the road at St. Louis FC. We're going to break down that result, look at the upcoming match against Birmingham, and we sit down with general manager Mike Jacobs to talk about the newest MLS signing, all on this episode of Speedway Soccer. Hey, everybody. Welcome into tonight's episode of Speedway Soccer. We are at Alley Taps on historic Printer's Alley, brought to you by the Beautiful Game Network and Roughneck Scarves. Check them out at roughneckscarves.com. As always, a huge shout out to the 104.5 The Zone Podcast Network for having us, for distributing us. And listen, we're glad to be here. We are here tonight with
Jonathan Slate,
Andy Simmons,
and Ben Wright.
Ben's calling in, so if there's a little delay on him responding, it's because he didn't have the dedication to make it here in person tonight, so just blame him for that. Guys.
Well, what can we say about Sloop?
Yes. We almost had the 5 for 5, and Sloop was like, yeah, I'm just not going to make it out tonight. Sorry. Listen, we always say it's much better to come in and talk about a win than it is a loss. This is kind of the worst kind of loss to come in and talk about, so we're just going to preface everything with that. Look, we said the other day we thought that the Tampa Bay result was the best result that the club has gotten all season. Away to a team that good, a team we had never beat before, a venue that's hard to play in, you go in and get all 3 points, gutsy win. I think as awesome of a result as that was, this was as bad of a result. A 1-0 win, a 1-0 loss, rather, away to a team who, look, I think is just – really talent-wise, a fringe playoff team. I don't think that's unfair. I'm not trying to cut them down on anything like that. And on the season, you end up dropping all 6 points to a team that might not make the playoffs. Are they fighting for their lives? Sure, and we're going to get through some of that stuff. But let's just start general reactions. Ben, we'll start with you. Just general thoughts on the match, how it went.
Yeah, I mean, I think we would all agree that going into it, it was a game that Nashville should win. And I think that was a totally fair assumption going in. And I think, I mean, Gary Smith and I think Nashville players are aware of that too. I think, I mean, we talked about this a little bit before we started recording. I think it was potentially a bit of a trap game for Nashville coming off of some really good results, going on the road to a team that that's honestly just kind of desperate for results at this point, kind of on the other end of the spectrum. Nashville went into the game fighting for first place. And then you have St. Louis just fighting for a playoff spot. So I don't think it was going to be an easy game by any stretch of the imagination, but definitely one. I mean, Nashville, just over the course of the season in terms of just talent on the roster, is a better team. And I think that's a game that they should have won, and definitely their performance should have been better than it was.
Yeah, I mean, I would say probably all of us thought going into this game that I don't think any of us even predicted a draw. When we recorded it and, you know, when we put out the preview, it was definitely a game that was frustrating to watch at times. I would say even in the Red Bulls game, which is the last game that we lost, I don't think I was as frustrated watching a match as I was watching this. I mean, I was frustrated with the referee, Red Bulls.
Sure.
But I felt that there was at times there was some issues in the midfield. I think Balu played really as well as he could. LaGrassa just struggled, and I think they at times look to overload the midfield. I know they were playing a 4-4-2, but I feel like, you know, at times either Calvert or Blackwood were dropping back. And I think when we're going to get on to the substitutions probably in a little bit, I think probably one of the biggest things that hurt this team was the fact that there wasn't really a central midfielder we can bring in with, you know, Tribbett, unless you would have, you know, pushed Tribbett up. Or Derek Jones just isn't healthy right now. So, I mean, I think we're seeing right now a little bit where this team does have a lot of players in certain positions. Central midfield is a spot that we just were thin.
Yep. I just think it's one of those things that, sure, you can lose 1-0, but the put in the performance that Nashville put in just really just seemed like they weren't really trying to go for a, you know, a positive result, be it that they didn't have many attacking chances. They were passing the ball fairly well, but it's just once they got to the final third, it seemed like the same old Nashville that we were used to, where they weren't really trying to convert any chances. And look, they were on their heels for pretty much the entire game as well, too. Once Kotcher almost put in that one shot at the beginning of the game, I was very nervous about them moving forward because it just seemed like they were, you know, on their heels the entire game, and it showed that way. But we can get into Gary not really adjusting and trying to go for the end result of all three points. It just seemed like it was too little, too late for him to make the necessary changes. And we talked about that a lot, but I just felt like, you know, once he finally did make the substitution, just, you know, there just wasn't enough time for them to, you know, reach back and get a point.
I think to Slape's point, it was one of those matches that, like the Red Bulls match, the result was hard done, right? Like the result didn't match the performance. But in this result, the result really did match the performance. Yeah, and I think that's probably the most frustrating thing is that, you know, if you're being objective, we didn't deserve to win the game. Like, and I guess to the team and Gary's credit, right, we fought that very, very few times this year. The Charlotte match early in the season, mm-hmm. this one might be the only two that, like, screamed, like,
I would say that early Charleston, the first Charleston,
the first Charleston game, the league game, the league sure. game. Yeah, that's fine. I think, that's
but again,
fair.
To that point, very few
examples of that. So I think maybe what is making this one like seem, I don't know, worse than it is. Maybe is just that
the performance,
like,
on the field.
Yeah, it's just that we haven't seen that in so long, and you know, especially again, it was just kind of so shocking coming off of that Tampa match, in which the team looked good, and no, it was a quality opponent. And yeah, we weren't the best team all night that night. We had the bigger moments. We answered. We rose to the occasion. There was just no rising to the occasion in that St. Louis match. You know, it was an odd one. You look at the stats, and it's kind of like it almost is a mirror of what we've maybe been able to do to other teams, right, where they have the better of the possession. You know, you're giving the better of the possession away to kind of have those good quality chances. It just seemed like St. Louis had a game plan, was willing to do it, and executed it, and ultimately capitalized on a few individual errors, which I think that's probably the first thing we should touch on detail-wise in the game. The lineup comes out. Look, I think it's unfair to say Bradley Bourgeois or Ken Tribbett don't deserve to start, because I think,
especially coming off the Tampa game.
Exactly. Yeah. Since Brad has come back into the lineup, he's played tremendously well, was in the team of the week, all of that stuff. Tribbett's been good all season when he's been healthy. I think the more confusing thing on our end, and we texted right away as soon as we saw the lineup, is I just don't really totally understand what Oakford has done to not be in the starting lineup. And I guess that's the problem of having several starting quality center backs, is that somebody who's good enough to start is going to be on the bench. So Oakford being out,
maybe his thinking though is that this back three works so, and it works well in the last game against Tampa as well too. So if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
I think that's fair. Yeah.
I think I would push back a little bit on that. I mean, yes, it is good to, you know, let your guys that played well play again, but I'm of the opinion, like, getting your best guys on the field. And I think with Oakford and Lasso, those are far and away your two best center backs. And with as good as, you know, Tribbett has been this year, and with as good as Bourgeois has been since he's come back into the team, I don't think that I don't necessarily understand that, especially because, like, it's not like there's a fixture congestion at this point, because, you know, we don't play again until we play Birmingham a week from tomorrow. So, I mean, there is ample time to get fit.
I think, you know, I think this one's maybe unfair to Gary. We're splitting hairs a bit, right? Like, there's no assurance that Oakford comes in and doesn't make a similar mistake. There's no assurance if you play the game again, the way the goal gets scored. So it's an easy one to just kind of cherry pick or whatever and say, hey, all I know is that we all texted immediately and said, hey, two games in a row, no Oakford. I guess it's just a drop, right? And it, I don't know. I just think it's a little strange. I think the guy's rock solid. And again, Trippett's been great almost the whole season when healthy. Since Brad has had his resurgence into the lineup due to injury, due to other things taking place, he's been tremendous as well. Actually, I think it was last his red card that got him his first minutes. But he's rose to the occasion. So I get really both sides of that argument. And it's just unfortunate the way that it came off. And now we're talking, oh, it was awkward, was in there. Maybe this doesn't happen. I think that's unfair. Ben, I guess the biggest detail that all of us talked about again, and this was real time during the game, was how long it took for the substitutions to happen. I mean, the trends in the game were there. We'd been outplayed for the majority of the second half. I mean, the majority of the game. And it was, what, 77 that the first sub happened? Or that was when the goal was scored, and it was even after that, right?
Yeah, well, it's the goal was scored, and then the sub came right away. After that.
So, I mean, that's 13 minutes left in regulation to go. That is late in a game that is as important as that result was, in which we were so clearly being outplayed. Ben, your general thoughts there.
Yeah, I mean, I think we just saw – I think Nashville had good moments in the first half just controlling possession. But, I mean, like you guys said, there's just not much going on in the final third for them. And then, yeah, St. Louis scored as Belmar was on the sideline waiting to come in the 77th minute. And that's just – I mean, Nashville had been outplayed for 20, 25 minutes straight at that point. I think to kind of his point of view, I don't think there are a ton of midfield options other than Akinyode and LaGrassa, both of whom were already starting because Jones isn't back yet. Vermeer's on loan. Reed's hurt. But, I mean, some change had to be made before then.
My issue is not bringing any of the – I've been clamoring for Alan Wynn to come on or Belmar just to get a change of pace to get some attack going, because at that point the attack had been lackluster. And like I pointed out earlier, by the time both those guys were brought on, I felt like it was too little too late.
Yeah, I felt that King was probably the one that was getting the most forward and probably creating as much, because I feel like guys were trying to get a little more narrow, because I felt, you know, we kind of touched on this before we recorded, but Cameron Lancaster was cut off again. Mm-hmm. And I think some of that is, I think there's a variety of things there. I think, you know, he's still getting fit. Yeah. He did almost have, which it wouldn't have counted, but that great half volley.
Yeah.
And I think game plan as well is probably part of it, trying to cut him off. From the St. Louis.
They executed really, really well defensively.
So, I mean, there's a couple of things there, but, I mean, it is a trend that we have started to see the past couple of games.
I think the way to say it, probably the most fair way, is that we just missed Daniel Rios, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think even Lancaster's importance probably improves if it's him playing with Rios instead of Rapapa. And that's not a slight on Rapapa, because we think he's been great all year too. But, I mean, Rios is the class of this team.
Yeah.
And the team greatly misses him. And, again, to your point earlier, roster-wise and just health-wise, the sooner Derek Jones gets back, the better. Because kind of that insurgence into the midfield, I think, is just going to be huge for this team.
I mean, I even think competition just in training as well, too. Like, I think players play better when they have, you know, when they're competing with somebody else for a position. And, I mean, really, those two guys are de facto starters right now.
So, listen, there's no kind of nice way to put it. It was a tough result. It was a bad result. We're going to get into, after the break, kind of the context of that result and what it would have meant if we could have won and what it means because we lost. But right now, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we sit down with general manager Mike Jacobs to talk about the new MLS signing, Randall Leal, about what they saw in him as a player and what they hope to get out of him at the MLS level. We'll be right back with that. This is Speedway Soccer.
This episode of Speedway Soccer Pod is brought to you by Taylor Street Coffee and Tea. Taylor Street Coffee and Tea is a new family-owned coffee shop tucked away in Germantown, serving coffee from Crema Coffee Roasters and tea from Firepot Nomadic Teas. Check them out at 100 Taylor Street, Monday through Friday, between 8:30 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. They're located inside an art collective building, so check out their Instagram page to find them, at Taylor Street Coffee. Drop by, drink up.
All Hey, everybody. Davey Shepherd, Speedway Soccer. I am lucky enough to be joined on the phone by General Manager of Nashville SC, Mike Jacobs. Mike, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today.
Hey, Davey.
Hey, so listen, we want to just do a kind of a quick chat about the biggest news over the last week for Nashville SC. Another MLS signing, Costa Rican left wing Randall Leal. I had to ask Christina the correct pronunciation there. Randall Leal. We're excited to. I think every Nashville fan is just excited to see a 22-year-old from South America signed, Central America signed. On our end, it's a it's a guy who maybe it's hard to find information on for just your general soccer fan, for even media members like us who are, just kind of getting going on this. What can you tell us about Randall, not just the player, but Randall the person?
It's interesting, the idea of following players from abroad here in the U.S., because I think even when you think of guys who come into our league, from other countries, players like Diego Valeri in Portland or Sebastian Giovinco in Toronto, those are pretty prominent players in their home countries that I think maybe because of a lack of exposure here in the United States, people didn't know much about them before they came here. And, I think similar to Hani's signing, I think the idea of someone like Randall with his pedigree and exposure he's had in his country, both domestically and representing his national team, he's a pretty exciting prospect, not only in Costa Rica, but in CONCACAF in general.
So why don't you maybe give us just a little bit of insight? We talked about this after the Hani signing as well. How does a guy like that get on your radar? 22-year-old kid, obviously he's playing with it, what seems to be the biggest club in the Costa Rican league. How do you guys find him and then just do the work on, hey, volume of time, this is the right guy?
Yeah, I'd love to tell you that Randall is a under the radar, a hidden gem. But as I mentioned earlier, he's a pretty prominent name right now in CONCACAF. I think for our staff, as we started prepping for the Gold Cup, the idea was trying to look at some young prospects that we thought might be available we could acquire. And I think Chance Myers, our chief scout, did a really good job early on as we shortlisted certain positions, identifying a player like Randall who not only might be available, but might be attainable for us to acquire. And, he's someone that we tracked pretty closely, in his games with Saprissa. I had a chance to watch him play live during Gold Cup against Haiti up in New Jersey. And I think pretty quickly for us, we had a chance, especially watching him play, both for Saprissa in a team that has guys who have played in MLS. But really, I think watching him play in Gold Cup on a team with players currently playing in the league, against other teams with players in the league, to see him stand out with and against players like that, pretty quickly we were able to see that he was going to be somebody who we thought had a pretty positive effect on our group in Major League Soccer.
So how do you see his flexibility as a player? If you just kind of look at it on paper, it seems like him and Akam maybe both prefer the left. Do you think both of those guys have flexibility? Do you see that more one or the other? And kind of with a secondary point of that, a lot of our conversations that we've had on the podcast, Mike, have been about building the roster out and players who not only fit together, but fit the club as a whole. How do you see we've got that attacking trio now? Akam, Mukhtar, and now Leal. How do you see those three guys playing together?
Well, I guess it's kind of both questions kind of tie into each other. And I guess what I would say first is I would hate to pigeonhole or diminish Randall's value by saying he's only like a left winger. I describe him as an attacking midfielder because he really is versatile and flexible enough to play not only either flank, but to play as like a 10 or even center forward as well. So, Randall's a very flexible and versatile attacking player who could help a team in a number of different roles. And, I think they had a playmaker like Randall along with the signing of Hani. I think you can kind of get a glimpse of our expectations for how we want to play as well to have two dynamic attacking playmakers out of midfield. I would say, maybe in comparison to someone like David, David's an out-and-out winger. He's arguably the fastest player in MLS, and his game is based on picking up balls, running past guys on the ball or off the ball, getting into threatening spots behind. He has the ability, if you follow other sports, like football, he's a vertical threat that can stretch the field and get it behind guys. I think Randall has great pace also and has the ability to do some of those things. I don't know anybody in the league who's as fast as David. It'd be unfair to compare him as far as speed, but you know, I think their games kind of balance each other out really well. I think maybe like a fire and ice type thing where you have one who is constantly trying to get in behind the other team's defense, where the other guy's more of a schemer and like a playmaker who's trying to create chances for players like David to get in behind.
That's really, really good. That's a great piece for fans to hear at home. Kind of just a quick thing that we wanted to touch on. We've now seen Hani and Randall both stay in their current domestic leagues for the MLS signing. Can you tell us a little bit about the thought process that goes into them staying in those leagues? Is it just wanting them to stay somewhere that they're comfortable, maybe at a level that you see is higher than USL potentially? What goes into that decision?
Well, for us, you know, I use that phrase a lot about shortlisting. I think, you know, headed by our chief scout, Chance Myers, and our director of strategy analytics, Oliver Miller-Farrell, I think as they start looking at what attributes that we think that we're looking for as a staff, talking to Gary, myself, you know, our assistant general manager, Ali Mackay, we look at the certain attributes we want to have in our team. Then it's trying to go out and try and identify players that we think, you know, fit those profiles. And, you know, looking in leagues that we think translate well to our league, looking in countries that we think players are going to assimilate or settle into our country, I think that helped us in regards to both Hani and Randall. They're both very, very different in their profiles. You know, Hani, as a German international playing, you know, in the Bundesliga, you know, he decided to go abroad, and you know he left playing there to go play for Benfica in Portugal, and in the Brøndby where he is now in Denmark. You know, so he pursued other opportunities in Europe to give him a chance to play more and to kind of heighten his profile. In Randall's case, you know, where he did go over to play in Europe and play in Belgium, and his quest in trying to find the best opportunity for himself to play as much as possible, and at the age he's at, I mean, look, at, you know, he's only 22 right now. You know, the idea of going back to Costa Rica, to his native country, but also to play for Saprissa, who, you know, for those who follow CONCACAF Champions League and CCL, you know, Saprissa is the biggest team in Costa Rica, in San Jose there, and you know, bringing a chance to play such a prominent role in a team that really kind of feeds the Costa Rican national team, it was a no-brainer for him to come back. And I think for us, watching these guys play in leagues, not only in Germany or in Portugal or in Denmark, in Hani's case, but, you know, in Randall's case, having seen a player like that who has been abroad in Belgium, playing in a league and in a team like Saprissa in Costa Rica, that's translated really well to our league here. We kind of felt both these guys display characteristics and qualities, not only as players, but as people that we thought would fit in well, not only in Major League Soccer, but in Nashville in general. And I also think in both cases, what helped a lot is, you know, where Hani is German by nationality and primarily German speaking, where Randall is Costa Rican by nationality and primarily Spanish speaking. You know, they both also speak English fluently. And I think the ability to have players who are bilingual and in some cases speak even more than two languages, it's going to aid in the cohesion of our team on and off the field.
So let's talk a little bit more about that cohesion of the team on and off the field. We've kind of got the roster starting to build out now. Obviously, we've got the guys we've talked about today, Mukhtar, Akam, Leal now. We've got a guy like Derek Jones, the guys who are currently at Nashville, Lancaster, and Rios, and then Godoy as well, who is still in San Jose. Currently, before the Randall signing, there was very clear that one of those players was a designated player. There's been kind of mixed reports in the media whether Leal is a TAM player or a young designated player. Can you add any clarity to that at this point in time? Or is that a decision you guys will make after the new year when you've kind of built out the rest of the roster?
Why don't I start off kind of giving some insight into the mechanisms with our league to acquire players and put them in the roster, and then we talk a little bit more specifically about Randall. You know, the reality is that Major League Soccer is about as complicated a league to be able to acquire players and fit in a roster as anywhere in the world. And that doesn't mean bad is good as much as just different. And it's important to kind of understand how to navigate those mechanisms. You can only have three DPs on your roster. There are different designations for players, and whether a player is a designated player or a TAM player, you know, the fact that David Akam had been a DP and was brought down to TAM when he was in Philadelphia you know, not only made him an asset for us on the field, but also created some flexibility with him. He can go into a variety of different spots. And, you know, for us, as we continue to try to find a way to get the best players possible for our team, having roster flexibility is really important. And at Randall's age, you know, to be a young VP, similar to Cam, it's not just how much money you want to spend. You have to be of a certain cachet or status, a certain level of experiences for LinkedIn to designate you in one of those roles. And the fact that Randall has looked at somebody that, you know, you have to be paid at a certain level to hit those thresholds as well. But, you know, the fact that he has the flexibility to be considered either a young VP or a TAM player is really, really important for us. And where those decisions don't be made until roster compliance date, which is much closer to the start of the season, I think fans and National Soccer Club should feel really good about the fact that not only added two players, you know, that, you know, in David and in Randall that have the ability to be considered a designated player in our league, they should also be excited about the fact that we have the roster and cap flexibility to move those guys to either DP, young DP, or TAM spots to allow us the flexibility to add the kind of players they all want to have on their team.
No, that's great. I think that's kind of the perfect information to know. We talk about that, who the roster build out. I think the one thing that's notable, another MLS signing who is not a defender. Can you talk about a little bit about your all strategy as you continue to build out this roster? I mean, look, we've heard things, and I'm not going to ask you to confirm or deny whether, you know, there's an option on Lasso and stuff like that. But ultimately, we've seen a more defensive midfielder signing in Godoy. You guys would, I think, contend that that's a mischaracterization, but it's a characterization nonetheless. And then several attacking players signed. Talk to us about how you guys are continuing to build that out, especially with a coach who has kind of garnered the moniker of a defensive coach.
Well, when you look at how expansion teams traditionally hemorrhage goals in Major League Soccer, if Gary's going to carry a moniker like defensive coach, I'm really thankful and appreciative that the coach we have to lead us in our expansion team is going to focus on not conceding goals. So I'm really happy about that.
Yeah, so, I think that's fair.
Yeah, you know, when you look at the team Gary's working with in USL this season, as well as the teams he had in Colorado, those teams were never a shortage for scoring goals. And, you know, when you see how we went from expansion team in USL year one to year two to become one of the highest scoring teams in USL, I'd like to think that the system and model of play that we use will create and promote creating and finishing scoring chances. And, you know, when you look at the signs we've had here, you know, I stress all along about understanding kind of our plan or appreciating that there's a plan in place to build this out. And, you know, I think that each of the guys have announced for different roles and responsibilities in our team. And, you know, I think fans who appreciate and are excited about watching a team that's involved in attacking soccer, you know, has to be tickled when you see signings and names like Luke Carr and Leal in our group. And, you know, I think, you know, if you look at, you know, we talk a lot about Nashville SC or NSC DNA. I think what's also really intriguing about both guys like Hani and like now Randall, as great as they are, and they've demonstrated being able to create and finish scoring chances, they're also guys who really work very hard with a high work quotient and also play really hard on both sides of the ball. And I think for us, you know, we've tried to demonstrate all the time we talk about NSC DNA, that the best way we can represent the city is to just to be in situations where we're competing to win all the time. And the best way to do that is to be an exciting team. And the way fans get excited is to watch teams fight hard to compete and to watch teams create and finish scoring chances. And I think when you see another piece like Randall being added, you're seeing more and more pieces that seem to kind of demonstrate that DNA that we stress so much.
Mike, listen, we're always grateful for your time. It's always an insightful look at who these new players are, and especially when it's a guy like Randall who, like you said, is a guy who's under the radar. It's always really, really good for us to be able to give fans an opportunity to have a closer look at who that player is, both on the field and off the field. So we're really, really grateful for you coming on with us again today. Everybody at home, stay tuned. We'll be right back looking at the upcoming matches for Nashville Soccer Club. Stay tuned. This is Speedway Soccer.
This episode of Speedway Soccer Pod is brought to you by Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier of MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get custom scarves for your team or group at roughneckscarves.com.
everybody. Welcome back into Speedway Soccer. Huge thanks to Mike Jacobs for sitting down and talking about new signing Randall Leal. First and foremost, Randall, I'm sorry for how I pronounced your name in the last episode.
I would like to also.
I think I mispronounced it as well too, so it's fine.
In our defense,
I'd like to point out that I wasn't there.
Yeah, we know. Shut up. But we're sorry about that. If you end up hearing this, which, let's be real, is very, very not likely. So, I thought it was a really good talk with Mike. Obviously, I did it, so whatever. But I think he's an insightful guy, and when you get a chance to kind of pick his brain about what they think about a player, I just enjoy that opportunity, and so we hope you guys liked listening to it. Guys, kind of just your general thoughts. Probably the thing that stuck out the most to me was Mike saying, hey, look, like, Akam is an out-and-out winger. That guy is going to fly up the flanks. That's what he's going to do. I don't think that is who Leal is. I think he is a, you know, him and Hani both, I think, not are interchangeable, but are both attacking mids. So that he doesn't want to pigeonhole him, like he said. I thought that was maybe the standout comment for me and pretty, pretty encouraging thing. So I'll kind of hand it off to one of you guys.
I think also, like, I mean, he did talk about both of them, like, being versatile. I would say that, you know, I went back and caught most of the Costa Rica game that he was in after watching the U.S. game. But Leal is, while him and Hani are both are versatile, I think Leal is a much quicker player, and it's someone who can play on the wing a whole lot more. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would like to see Hani out there as much.
Yeah.
Especially if we're going to have, you have the option to put Akam and Leal both out there. But I mean, in that game on Friday night, he probably had their best chance. That wasn't a goal. I mean, he had a great shot. Kind of showed us what kind of player he is. And I, like, we still stand by. Like, I think this level of signing is something that is, you know, just that profile of a player is just something that's great.
Yeah, I think you touched on everything I was going to kind of touch on as well. I mean, the secret's out that this dude has, you know, he's gotten some appearances for the Costa Rican national team. And I don't think it's any secret now that he's definitely going to make an impact for Nashville moving forward on the MLS side, on the attacking side.
I mean, we do get a chance to, I don't know if the CONCACAF Nations League game is, you know, broadcast. I may be on the CONCACAF website, but they do travel to Haiti tomorrow night. So at 8:00. So if you want to get out of that abusive relationship with U.S. soccer and watch something else, then that's a great, great opportunity.
I think
go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think it's impressive that Nashville was able to land a guy like him who, I mean, we've seen rumors that he was linked to other teams, potentially like Liga MX. And I know there were European teams who had been linked with him in the past. And I just think it's impressive that Nashville is able to get in ahead of, I mean, teams who are probably realistically like ahead of them in the like transfer pecking order, and just land a guy like him who has such a high potential. I think it should be exciting for Nashville fans.
Yeah, I agree completely. It just seems like one, again, to not know a ton about the player, I've watched 60 minutes of him knowingly, you know. I think it just seems like the kind of thing, the profile just seems right for potential sell on for success in this league. So I think you got to be happy with it. And again, if you're a Nashville fan, it gives you the opportunity to watch him, watch Hani both, watch Akam and Godoy at MLS. So there's plenty of other soccer to be watching outside of just the Nashville SC game. So, which is just fun. It's just a good problem to have, you know, to get ready for next year. It's an exciting thing. Okay. Listen, back from fun talk back to not so fun talk. Let's talk about the context of the result against St. Louis. It was bad enough on its own. And then Ben, I think you made the good point that it's kind of a mixed bag of good and bad. It's bad because there was so much opportunity if we would have managed to get 3 points. But it's good because other teams faltered as well, and it wasn't as much damage done as it could have been. But I think the reality of the situation is that a team that looked like it was tracking well to perform and get a top four spot, dropping those 3 points in particular maybe puts that at more of a risk than before. So the results we're talking about outside of it, Charleston beats Indy. which is a huge result, really, just for the rest of the East in general. Did that put Red Bulls back on top, or because they drew, it didn't?
They're on top still.
They are.
They were ahead anyway.
They were ahead anyways, right? But that's a game in hand wasted on the rest of the top four, not us. And then NZFC draws as well, right?
Yeah, they were up. They were up 3-1, like in the 60th minute, I think.
Yeah, they went up 2-0.
Yeah,
Bethlehem called one back. They got another one, and then they gave up two more after that. And then there was that 0-0 draw from between Louisville and Pittsburgh.
Louisville and Pittsburgh. So, man, it was just like
there were points to be taken, and there could be a possibility for that Nashville could have jumped to the top.
I know there's no truth in the fact that, like, there can't be any truth in that trend that we perform well when there's more on the line. But the results bear that out consistently, and it's just the weirdest thing that we have.
Yeah, like, how can you ever know that?
Right. The matches were taking place at the same time, right? And the one was after. Like, there's no way you can actually know that that's what's going to happen. But it just never fails to, like, seem like,
yeah, like, correlation doesn't equal causation.
Right, exactly.
Ben will probably give us some, like, expected points. actually, I think Ben had kind of said, it's kind of a mixed bag there. Nashville still has, they've played 28 games, so they've played they're in the same number of points as North Carolina. But, you know, Indy's on 25, Pittsburgh's on 26. And then Tampa and New York both played 27.
If you want kind of the stats or the nerd breakdown, I had Nashville projected to finish in fourth before the loss, and now I have them in fifth. Still like about half a point behind Pittsburgh, which obviously can't happen. But I mean, I think it's obviously still close, and there's definitely still a chance for them to finish fourth or even higher. I think they have five games coming up at home, which is the second most in the league. I think only Loudoun has more, and they're basically out of the running for a top four spot. So, I mean, there's definitely the potential to go higher up the table, but I think, I mean, it brings up the issue that Nashville hasn't been great at home either. So, I mean, it's kind of a dangerous assumption to make that just because they're going to be at home, they're going to start picking up more points.
Is the reason for that you have them kind of projected in fourth spot, is that because of their track record of not doing so well at home, or is it just teams around them you think are just going to keep picking up points left and right?
Yeah, it's their typical points per game at home. So, okay. I mean, that could well improve, but if they perform at home like they have the rest of the season, they're going to miss out on the top four.
But I mean, also just on paper, results remaining to be played, we have the least potential to gain points of any of the other teams that could finish in the top four, right, Ben?
Yeah.
Pittsburgh, Red Bulls, Rowdies, and Indy all have more points to be gained than we do.
Yep.
We go and play Pittsburgh at home on the 21st, yep. So like within like 13 days. I mean, we go beat them, and then, you know, that's kind of
exactly
that's kind of squared away. I mean, I guess probably the biggest thing is, you know, while Birmingham's right there at the bottom of the playoffs, looking at their results.
Yeah,
they are
kind of an outlier for them as well. The Loudoun result is pretty bad.
I mean, they've won. Yeah. They've won four of their last five.
But those wins are against. Yes, the Rowdies win was very, very good, but a couple of matches against Atlanta United too in the last few. Charleston is bad.
Memphis as well too.
Yeah, Memphis is bad. 0-0 draw against Ottawa, not a good result. 1-1 draw against Loudoun, not a good result, but. I mean, they're doing what they got to do, so you can't really knock them. You know what I mean? They're not letting in many goals, and when they play a bad team, they're taking advantage and at least getting one. So Birmingham comes here in good form. There's no way around that. They play on the weekend. I believe they do, right?
Yes, they do.
Yeah, St. Louis.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they go they play St. Louis at home Friday night, and then they'll come to Nashville Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. Not Wednesday night, Tuesday night. They've been on Wednesday, the home games, right?
Yeah, that's where I was confused on whenever I was talking about this.
Kind of a huge result is for them as well. They play St. Louis, kind of who they're battling for a playoff spot with, then Nashville, then Indy. So it's going to be one – like, there's not going to be games where not enough teams are out of it the rest of the way for Nashville. So we need to just be ready for teams who are going to kind of give absolutely everything towards the calls.
Maybe that's a good thing as well, too. It could sharpen Nashville a lot. Agreed. If they get into the playoffs as well, too. So,
well, and for Nashville, too, they have what, 6 games left? Only two of those?
6 games left, and we play on the road at Loudoun, and that's it.
And only 2 of those games are against teams who are not currently in playoff position.
Atlanta and Loudoun, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, yeah.
And Loudoun, I mean, Loudoun could be in playoff
could
position.
Could be in one by then.
Nashville plays them. So, I mean, it's not, I mean, they're at home, but they're going to be really tough playoff level matchups.
Yeah, it's a, look, there's just work to be done. There's no way around that. It doesn't mean that the work can't be done. And I expect a bounce back performance against Birmingham. I think Gary's kind of proven that this year, that the setbacks have been very, very temporary. So I don't expect there to be any like lingering issues here. I am interested to see the lineup. Is Oxford back in it? Is Rios close to healthy? Him and Jones are both questionable for the last one. So you would think they're working towards healthy. And the sooner those guys are back, the better. But it's a couple of big matches coming up. Birmingham has been in great form. Then we played Pittsburgh at home a few days after that. And then it's Loudoun away, which should be a fairly straightforward result. And then you've got Louisville, North Carolina FC, and you finish the season with Atlanta. So
don't forget that North Carolina game's at Nissan Stadium.
It's going to be a big one. Mm-hmm. So, look, there's opportunity there. I just don't see much room for dropping points and getting a top 4 spot. So we've got to go out there and do the work. The one against Pittsburgh is probably even bigger than the game we've been to Birmingham, if we're just being honest. So, look, I look forward to it. It's going to be a great opportunity. Unfortunately, we've got to kind of just linger on the loss for a few more days because it isn't on the weekend. It's next week, but it's the way it goes. Guys, any final thoughts as we head into kind of a bye weekend? I know Sloop has a piece coming out this week that's a reflection of his time at MLS this weekend at New York City FC. That'll be out Wednesday, right, Ben?
Yes, sir.
Cool. So Sloop's piece will be out. Check that out on the website.
Too busy to come do a podcast. Just traveling around.
I know, right? He's supplying some good stuff. I found those stories really, really interesting. And for a guy who hasn't watched a ton of MLS traditionally, I've really enjoyed the stuff he's been doing as he makes those away trips.
Yeah, and we're going to be on the lookout. Going to have a piece out covering Hani Mukhtar's game this weekend on Sunday. I got to figure out if I can watch Saprissa at all.
Yeah, you have to find a pretty interesting stream link for that, but I think it can be done.
But we'll definitely have that and probably keep an eye on what Akam is doing as well. But look for that beginning of next week.
Great. Well, listen, it's exciting time for MLS – or sorry, for NSC. We there's a lot just kind of in the air, so it's interesting to see. And I the more days in between games this time of year, it just gets worse and worse because there's more nerve wracking. There's more on the line. So we look forward to it. Make sure you make it out Tuesday night to First Tennessee Park for the game against Birmingham. As always, thanks to Alley Taps for having us. Huge shout out to the Beautiful Game Network and Roughneck Scarves. Anything you might need for a soccer team, for a supporters group, whatever you need, roughneckscarves.com. Check them out there. And a huge shout out to 104.5 The Zone and their podcast network. Will Bowling takes care of us over there. Anything you need sports related, they've got you covered. They're branching in the non-sports related podcast. Chad Withrow sat down and did a cool interview with Megan Barry. Check that kind of stuff out. I think that's interesting stuff worth listening to. It's worth your time being spent there. So go give it a look. Huge shout out to those guys. As always, the most important shout out is to you, the listener. We're glad that you're here. This is the reason we do it. It's a lot of fun, so thanks for listening. You make it worth it. This is Speedway Soccer. We will be back next week. Take care.
Never go full Shepherd. Nope.